Okay, slowly come back. And please read quickly, read what you had written yesterday evening and today, and see if you can underline what you think are the best thoughts, especially your deepest aspiration, because we'll do something with that in a moment. But just underline that quickly. Your best and deepest thoughts, underline it. And again, it's quite private. And especially your best aspiration and deepest aspiration. And when you've completed that, just look at me so I can just see, get an idea of when we're completed. Now, think of yourself at Srimadan Mohan Mandir, which shouldn't be too difficult to do. And there is Srila Prabhupada, and there is Sri Sri Gaurinathai. And then take that aspiration that you have and just please face Srila Prabhupada and Gaurinathai, and please take that aspiration and offer it at their lotus feet, and then offer your obeisances, and then we'll begin. Om Aginatum Inandasya Zana Zana Salakaya Chaksu Samilatan Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapandantika Vansha Kapatubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayivaja Patitanam Pabinebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Now, our speaking about the life of Narada Muni, sometimes I think of this as the fortunate life of Narada Muni. It had its beginnings not in the first canto where we hear of Narada as he has taken his birth, but rather the life of Narada Muni. Oh yes, please take out this sheet that has the verses that we'll be covering on the life of Narada Muni from the first canto, fifth and sixth chapters. But Narada Muni's life before that life where he took his birth as the son of a maidservant was when he was a demigod, or an Upa Devata, as a Gandharva in the heavenly planets, and his name was Upa Barhana. And he was very beautiful. That means that this soul had such incredible piety, and that brought him to enjoy heavenly delights as a famous and very attractive, beautiful musician on the heavenly planets. And he was respected by everyone due to his piety, due to his beauty and his great singing abilities. And then there was a sacrifice being held, and it was going to be in glorification of Lord Hari. And the Bhagavatam in the 7th canto, 15th chapter, the final chapter of the 7th canto, describes it as Hari Katha Upagayane, that it was a festival that was specifically meant to glorify and speak the glories of Lord Hari. And please listen to this carefully, because there's many great lessons, even in this very early part of the life of Narada Muni as Upa Barhana. So he was invited to that festival, basically a Sankirtan festival that was meant to glorify Lord Hari. But when he went, because of some selfishness, lust, kam, atma indriya priti within his heart, he gathered around him many beautiful women. And the painting in the Bhagavatam in this regard is striking, because there he is playing a musical instrument, Upa Barhana, and so beautifully decorated and such beautiful features. And he's singing, and all the women are looking at him with wide open eyes, very touched in their hearts. And he's singing not Harikatha, but the Bhagavatam describes that he's singing about the demigods. But although he's singing about the demigods, and although he's not singing the glories of Krishna, neither of those, neither Krishna nor the demigods, are actually in the center of his motivation. Basically, he's singing, and he's singing the glories of Upa Barhana and his singing ability and his beauty. And all the lady demigods are appreciating this very much. But the demigods, the Prajapatis, did not appreciate this. And they cursed him. They cursed him to become a Sudra. Why a Sudra? A lower class person. Why? What does that have to do with him being blessed with the opulences of a demigod, and using those opulences basically in his own service, not in the service of Hari, which was very inappropriate, especially at that gathering, but indeed it is inappropriate anywhere. Being cursed to take his birth as a Sudra meant that he would lose all the sources of his pride, his abilities that were in fact given to him by the grace of the Lord. We take our birth in this world, and what is it that has given us the specific birth that we have? We have passed countless lives, and we have unlimited karma, but by the grace of Krishna, by the grace of the super soul, we are born in a handful of that karma is allotted to us for this life. And whatever opulences are in that are really only gifts. And with a swift moment in time, we can lose everything or part of everything. And they are gifts only, and yet there's such a strong tendency to become proud. In other words, pride is the false ego expanding and imagining that it has something of its own, and imagining that those things that it thinks it has can and should be used for his own pleasure, not for Hari Sankirtan, not for the glorification of the Lord. Using those things that are given by Krishna and extracting something for myself based on false ego. That full sense that I can be the enjoyer, which is really described in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita as a sort of bhav. Ishwaraham aham bhogi siddham balavan sukhi. So he was cursed. He lost everything. From a position of great prestige and opulence, cursed. Practically speaking, this is the beginning of his spiritual life. In this world, it is very difficult to tell the difference between fortune and misfortune, between a curse and a blessing, and how quickly the blessing turns into a curse, and how quickly the curse can turn into a blessing, which is indeed what happened in the case of Narada Muni. And again, the context in which we are speaking of the lives of Narada Muni is that he is a great acharya, a great mahajan, and he is a great savior of fallen souls throughout the universe and throughout time. And it begins with a blessing that turns into a curse, that turns into him taking a lower birth, which turns, as we will hear very soon, into the greatest blessing. But the experience of having, so to speak, the carpet pulled out from under us. What happens if we're walking and the carpet gets pulled out? We end up falling. The experience of that, of the curse, is never pleasant. It is never pleasant because our feeling of power, of pride, is destroyed. Our false ego is undermined. And we experience that indeed we are insignificant. The opposite of feeling insignificant is feeling full of oneself, that I am significant, that I am important. And this, of course, is not bhakti. This, of course, is the enemy of bhakti. It is pride, it is false ego. It is the mind, it is the intelligence. So now, let us just move to Narada's actual birth as the son of a maidservant. And this is described in the Bhagavatam in the fifth chapter of the first canto. And we'll begin hearing what happened to Narada, described in first canto, fifth chapter, 23rd verse. And that's on the sheet. And in this first class, the verses that we will cover are right up to the bottom of over here, the 29th verse in the fifth chapter. And then we'll begin with the 30th verse in the second of the classes. Now, this 23rd verse begins with Narada describing to his student Srila Vyasadeva his own situation, because Srila Vyasadeva has asked Narada Muni. He's feeling some dissatisfaction within his heart, even though he's compiled the entirety of the Vedic literatures, and still he is feeling dissatisfaction in his heart, because we will not, Vyasadeva, Srila Vyasadeva, or any soul, will not experience full satisfaction, the satisfaction that the soul is longing for, until that soul's relationship with Krishna is fully awakened, and he's living in that relationship with Krishna. So Narada Muni, part of his reply to Srila Vyasadeva is this. He first instructs him. And then Narada Muni begins to explain how he achieved this exalted position. And his life is what we are hearing now about how he achieved it. And again, it begins with the curse. So he begins by saying, the Sanskrit of this begins, Aham pura tita bhave abhavams mune. Pura means formerly. Aham, I formerly, in the previous millennium, I wasn't the son of a maidservant in an unfortunate position, or I wasn't this great devotee Narada Muni. And nor was I a great, powerful, opulent, well-respected, very seemingly significant demigod, but rather I was a most insignificant person. In the last millennium, O Muni, I was born of the son of a certain maidservant engaged in the service of brahmanas who are following the principles of Vedanta. When they were living together during the 4 months of the rainy season, I was engaged in their personal service. He was a young boy. And there was a type of an inn, a motel or a hotel, that his mother was serving within. And he was also there, and he was also performing services to the guests who were staying there. There is no mention of his father. This maidservant who was his mother didn't know who the father was even. So what an unfortunate circumstance, a stripping away of his opulences, a completely disrespected position with no future, no chance in life, practically speaking. And what does one learn when one is in a situation which is bereft of opulence, bereft of respect, bereft of beauty? One learns two extremely important qualities, humility, and born of humility is dependence. And this actually was the greatest virtue of the ancient Vedic culture, is that everyone's position was subordinate. And one felt very secure in the subordinate position because one was cared for. In the contemporary cultures, no one wants to be subordinate to anyone. No one wants to be a servant. Everyone simply strives to be a master. No one goes to school, to the university, to learn how to serve, practically speaking. It's all about gaining the intellectual abilities that will allow one to be master, because Ishwaraham, master, means aham bhogi, I can enjoy. So this aspect of the Vedic culture, the ancient Vedic culture, which is so quickly being eroded by materialism, this very wonderful aspect of the Vedic culture where everyone was subordinate to another. So it's not a big thing to become a servant of Krishna. You're just changing who you're completely subordinate to. In the Vedic culture, if someone was born 1 year before one year after his elder brother, he was completely submissive to that elder brother. So what a consciousness. So it prepares one. It's not spiritual in and of itself, but it gives one a particular psychology, the mood of service, the mood of I'm depending on the blessings of another. I used to see this when I first went to Hong Kong many years ago, when we would go to the airport, the departure or the arrival lounge, and we'd see the boys or the mothers. Mothers of young Indian boys getting off the plane, and the boys would come and touch their mothers' feet as they would come. And it was at that time, because I'd never been to India, I couldn't understand exactly. It was sweet, but I couldn't understand what it was. But this is what it is: subordination, appreciation, humility, dependence, softness of heart, all these qualities in and of themselves are not Vaishnavism, but they certainly help one become Vaishnava. And again, contemporary culture just goes in the opposite direction. Or Prabhupada, he would never say culture, he would always say so-called culture. It's all about you. Excuse me, that's not at all about you. It's all about me. It's all about me. And the more one is thinking like that, rather than feeling protected and dependent, the more independent one is, the more lonely one becomes, because the further one becomes from what one really wants and what will really bring the satisfaction and what the journey of existence is really about and about what the journey of life is about. So Narada Muni, because of his big false ego, using his opulences, especially in that Sankirtan situation, for himself was cursed. Everything was removed from him. So no longer could he think himself as wonderful and powerful, and the purpose of all women is to look at him and to appreciate his wonderful qualities, but he became insignificant and dependent. So Narada continues to speak about his life. In the last millennium, I was born of a certain maidservant engaged in the service of brahmanas who are following the principles of Vedanta. And this, of course, brings one from pious, happy material life where one is dependent on the blessings of one's family and one is humble and wants to serve. It reaches its perfection when that serving tendency is directed by agyata sukriti, which ultimately means by daivam, or ultimately means by the grace of Krishna, into the association of devotees. And thereby, by the association of devotees, one renders service to them just because it's one's natural tendency, one's natural piety of consciousness leads one, even without knowledge, to rendering service to these bhakti-vedantas, these great souls, and suddenly one's spiritual life begins. So what Narada Muni is telling Srila Vyasadeva, as explained by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in answer to the question of how did he become this exalted soul, Narada Muni, that was Srila Vyasadeva's question, how did you achieve this exalted position? It has to do with the association of devotees, an atmosphere surcharged with devotion in the association of devotees. This is really the cause of how I became who I am, who I really am. Now I am who I really am not. It sounds funny. Now I am who I am not. And the proof of that is, the older you get, the more clearly this is demonstrated. When one is young and one's body is healthy and free from wrinkles and full of hair on the top of one's head, one has a conception of oneself who one is not. And as one gets older, for a good example in my case, I used to love to run. I could run for hours. And now I can't run for 30 seconds. That whole upadhi, that whole conception of myself is given up. We all have conceptions of ourselves that are false. And as we get older and look in the mirror, it becomes clear that my old conceptions are just simply not me. The teeth fall out, the eyes become weak, the knees give out, the back starts hurting, and I cannot do the thing, and I cannot be the person I used to think I was. My memory starts failing. The mind stops working properly. And ultimately, the very body who I think I am gets left behind and thrown into the fire. And all the hints are there as we get older. All my self-conceptions, all the upadis, the superimpositions over me are gradually given up. So while these Bhaktivedantas were living together during the 4 months of the rainy service season, I was engaged, Narada Muni said, in their service. So we'll read from the beginning of Srila Prabhupada's purport here. The wonder, and he's clearly following Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his purport here. The wonder, or the glories of an atmosphere surcharged with devotion, devotional service to the Lord, is briefly described herein by Sri Narada Muni. He was the son of the most insignificant parentage. He was cursed into that situation. He was blessed into that situation. He was not properly educated. He was cursed not to have a proper education. He was blessed not to have a proper education, because when one has a proper education, there is a tendency to what? To look down upon those poor uneducated masses, and one thinks oneself above. This is a tendency. Still, because his complete energy was engaged in the service of the Lord, he became an immortal sage, Prabhupada said. Such is the powerful action of devotional service. The living entities are the marginal energy of the Lord, and therefore they are meant for being properly utilized in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. We are Krishna's energy, and therefore we are His. The energy belongs to the energetic. We are His. We are meant for being properly utilized in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. And then we are naturally in our proper position, and we naturally feel satisfied. When this is not done, one's situation is called Maya. Therefore, the illusion of Maya is at once dissipated as soon as one's full energy is converted in the service of the Lord instead of in sense enjoyment. From the personal example of Narada Muni in his previous birth, it is clear that the service of the Lord begins with the service of the Lord's bona fide servants. Text 24. Although they were impartial by nature, those followers of the Vedanta blessed me with their causeless mercy. As far as I was concerned, I was self-controlled. I had no attachment for sports, even though I was a boy. In addition, I was not naughty, and I did not speak more than required. Very interesting here that and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points this out. There almost appears to be a contradiction here, that they were impartial. And what does impartial mean? It means like the sun, it shines its rays everywhere. It doesn't discriminate, oh, this person has good qualities, this person doesn't have good qualities, this person is capable of accepting and this person isn't. It's impartial completely. So the sages were giving their mercy everywhere. So what does it have to do with Narada Muni's outstanding qualities for a young boy? So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the preliminary mercy that they were distributing was to everyone. So Narada Muni, like anyone else, received that mercy, their good wishes, their tendency to be kind-hearted to all souls. But Narada Muni took that mercy and developed good qualities, or he took that mercy and he took advantage of that mercy and took it to a further level than others. I once heard a lecture that Srila Prabhupada gave in 1968, and this in Los Angeles. And that was a very intimate time. And devotees were very... Prabhupada went to Seattle first, and then he went to Los Angeles, and everyone was young, very innocent, and very enthusiastic. And one very, very... A young boy named Birbhadra, who later went to New Vrindavan, the son of Shilavati, who was the first ISKCON authority on puja, on doing puja, Prabhupada trained her. So so at that time, Tamal Krishna Raj was preaching. He was just then Tamal Krishna, Brahmacharya, but the devotees would call him Tamal, even a young boy. So at the end, Prabhupada would ask any questions, and the devotees would just ask any question that they wanted. So this young boy, Birbhadra, asked, "How come you show so much mercy to Tamal?" It was just so innocent. So innocent. So Prabhupada, he left, and he said that it's not that I show special mercy to Tamal, but he takes advantage of that mercy. And he gave the example of the sun shining its rays everywhere, over the ocean, over the land, over the mountains. But if one goes into one's room and closes the door and closes the window and closes the blinds, then one doesn't appreciate or take advantage of the mercy. So then Prabhupada said, "Then what can the sun do?" So that was his answer to that question. And that is the answer that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gets. The sun's mercy, the mercy gives, that the sun's mercy, the mercy of the Bhaktivedantas was flowing everywhere. Their hearts were open. Their hearts were filled with very exalted Krishna consciousness, and it was flowing. But this boy was blessed by their association, and he took full advantage of that by their service. And then his consciousness developed. They blessed him with their causeless mercy, And then, as far as I was concerned, he had qualities that allowed him to take advantage of it, or he developed those even more. He was self-controlled. He had no attachment for sports. He wasn't frivolous. He was serious. Because he had no ability to be frivolous, practically speaking, because of that curse. Although he was a mere boy. In addition, he wasn't naughty because necessity forced him to be like this. His mother was dependent upon him, even though he was just 4 or 5 years old. And he did not speak more than required. They will tell you darshana, and he was receptive. Text 25. Once only, by their permission, I took the remnants of their food. He took this Mahaprasad. And by so doing, all my sins were at once eradicated, such as the power of Mahaprasadam of these Bhaktivedantas. Thus, being engaged, and how did that come to him, that opportunity to take the remnants, even though once only and by their permission, it became because he was serving them. That service gave birth to opportunities that others perhaps didn't get. So what happened was they were merciful. He took advantage of the mercy, which led to the opportunities for more mercy, which led to purification. Sometimes the devotees naturally ask, please give me your mercy, please give me your mercy to their spiritual master and to senior devotees. But the giving of the mercy is natural. And we shouldn't worry about them giving them. That's their business to give the mercy. We should worry about our business. And which is usually the case, we worry about everyone else's business and what they should be doing, but we forget about what we should be doing. So what is our business? Our business is to be purified in heart, self-controlled, not naughty, and perhaps even not speak more than required, and not frivolous. Even... It doesn't, Prabhupada didn't mention in the purport, but he had no attachment for sports, not even cricket. Now that's detached, isn't it? One time I was in Chandni Chowk in Delhi, and I don't remember what I was doing there, but I kept hearing in the streets these loud roaring, 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 and then quiet. Then 2 minutes later, roaring and roaring and roaring, and then quiet. And I asked the proprietor, what's going on? He said, India is beating Pakistan. So, Narada Muni, this was before he was Narada Muni, he did his part. And he wasn't concerned about what would flow down to him. That happened naturally. So then, I'll just read the final sentence of Prabhupada's purport here. And actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains how Narada... He actually says that this chapter is the example of what is described, in the second chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, where there's the progressive stages are described of devotional service. So what is described there is illustrated in the life of Narada Muni, and he shows how each point, and immediately Narada Muni is going to go to Prema Bhakti by this association and by his receptivity to that this association. So although Narada Muni's life becomes exalted so quickly, and perhaps my life doesn't become exalted quickly at all, but still there'll be so many signposts in how he leads his life that teach me. So the last line of Prabhupada's purport says, he's talking, basically he will show how Narada Muni's life goes from Shraddha to Prem. So he says, all these stages from the beginning to the very end developed by the association of pure devotees, and that is the purport of this stanza, of this sloka. Now in text 26, Tatra vahan Krishna katha pragayatam. Tatra, there upon. Because here, I didn't read the second line of the second part of the verse. His sins were eradicated by taking Mahaprasadam. Thus, being engaged, I became purified in heart. And at that time, the very nature of the transcendentalist became attractive to me. That was the result of the purification of heart and that association. What was attractive to them, which was to be in Braja, serving C.C. Radha Gopinath Radhashyama Sunda in the land of Vrindavan, that taste became attractive to him. It went into his heart by their association. And the tastes of the material world became more and more unattractive to him. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur even said that, Prabhupada says it in one of his purports in the third or fourth canto. He says that the Bhakti Lata Bija's taste, that's what happens by association. A taste comes to mind. I want this. I don't want that anymore. Even though the heart may be not yet completely purified, the taste, the difference in taste comes. And he was attracted to it. The 26th verse, Tatra Vahan Krishna Katha Pragayatam, thereupon, as he became purified and their nature became attracted to him, Krishna Katha, or thereupon, Anu, every day, Anu Vaham, I, Krishna Katha Pragayatam, I heard them describing Krishna Katha, the pastimes of Krishna, Anugraha, by their causeless mercy. Because what is preaching? Preaching is basically when the devotee who has some of the internal energy, some spirituality, the internal energy within his heart, he just opens up his heart. That's all it is. It's very simple. It's unavoidable, practically speaking. So what Narada Muni did, he acted in such a way as that their hearts melted and were naturally open, and what was in their heart gradually and naturally flowed out to him because he was purified and because he was attracted to what attracted them. So by their mercy, anugrahena, ashrinavan, I gave oral reception, manahara. And it was attractive to my mind. He wanted that. It attracted him. So here is the translation, which you also have, to 26. O Vyas, in that association, and by the mercy of those great Vedantists, I could hear them describe the attractive activities of Lord Krishna. Because Krishna's activities are all attractive. And thus, listening attentively, my taste for hearing of the personality of Godhead increased at every step, increased more and more. Pratipadam, pona amrita aswadanam. Step by step, it increased, and ever the taste increased. There was one other point. Anupadam. At every step it was increasing because there were no offenses. He was just serving, he was humble, he didn't offend. And naturally, he made such advancement so rapidly. This is the ideal life of a devotee that's being described. Text 27. O great sage, he's speaking to Vyas, as soon as I got a taste of the personality of Godhead, my attention to hear of the Lord was unflinching. It was fixed. Nishtha. And as my taste developed, I could realize that it was only in my ignorance that I had accepted gross and subtle coverings, for both the Lord and I are transcendental. So the gross and subtle coverings over what? Over him, himself, the soul. And he began to fully use not only his body, but also his full mental faculties in the service of Krishna. In the beginning, the service is just with the body, practically speaking. But then, we wish to serve with full devotion, using fully everything that we are, the intelligence, the emotions, the full heart, buddhi, the mind, as the service is there. So read from Prabhupada's purport here. Please listen carefully. In fact, the personality of Godhead and the living being are transcendental. And they have nothing to do with material nature. When ignorance is removed, and it is perfectly realized that there is nothing existing without the personality of Godhead, that this is the meaning of Param Satyam, that the Bhagavatam meditates upon, Satyam Param Dhimahi, that Krishna is the absolute truth and there is nothing external to him. Nothing can exist and nothing can occur that is external to him. And this is the difference between the concept of Krishna as the absolute truth and the concept of God as Ishvara. God or Ishvara means the controller. The controller of what? When people, especially the Christians, they translate the word God is Ishvara. Very different from the Param Satyam, the absolute truth. Ishvara means the controller or the creator of this material world. But the concept of Krishna, the concept of the absolute truth, is far more inclusive. It includes everything. It includes the spiritual world. It includes Bhagavan. It includes Paramatma. It includes the concept that before he created the material world, he still existed and was doing something. He wasn't just looking at his watch, waiting, is it almost time to create the material world yet? What was he doing? How many more seconds left? And then the alarm goes off, and now it's time to create, and now I'm busy controlling all the time the material world. He's so much more than that. I once saw a little cartoon that showed an old man with a beard who was God, and he was sitting before a computer screen. What else would he be doing? He had a very fast connection to the internet. And he was sitting with his finger on right above the enter button, the return button on the keyboard. And on the screen there was a building, and there was a rope hanging down from the building, and there was a piano on the rope. And this person was walking along. And he was about to press the enter button so the piano would fall on his head. So he was just waiting there like that. And that's how people conceive of God. As, you know, he's the one, when I slip on the banana peel or when the brick falls on my head, he's pushed the enter button. But the absolute truth, because their only concept of him is in relationship to the material world. What an existence! I don't know why, you know, people in the material world want to become God, but their concept of him is that he's just, you know, he's got everyone's name on some great database, and you've done this wrong, and therefore you're going to get the piano on your head, and you've done this well, so your stocks rise in prices, And he's keeping track of everyone and everything continuously. Who'd want to do that? And yet they want to be God. I can't, it's actually inconceivable. No days off or anything even. But the absolute truth, Krishna, is something different, completely different. It's about Goloka Vrindavan. It's about always relating with those who you love the most and doing and arranging different activities where the loving exchanges can be raised to the highest point. And that's actually Krishna's pleasure. The devotees are always trying to serve him, and his pleasure is to serve his devotees, and therefore he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's such an amazing concept of the absolute truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I once went to the Sistine Chapel in Rome, which it's incredible. It's so religious on that level. It's so awe-inspiring. And everywhere you look, there are paintings, there are rugs that are embroidered with, there's a great light coming from the side of the painting. And the devotee of God is like this, in awe of the great light coming from the side of the painting. And our concept is completely different than that. Our concept of Vrindavan, of the absolute truth, is Mother Yasoda holding up a stick and the absolute truth is going like this. And tears are coming from his eyes. Who can understand this? Who can understand this? This is such mercy of Mahaprabhu that he's revealing the most intimate aspects of the absolute truth in his most intimate dealings with his most trusted, beloved devotees. And the more I've been looking at reading the Bhagavatam, this is just what I'm seeing. That sometimes you read in the newspaper that the butler of the royal couple is writing a book and revealing what's happened. Not trusted. This is what it takes to be in Goloka Vrindavan. One has to become so trustworthy. One's heart has to be so trustworthy. And what makes one's heart completely trustworthy? Who do you trust? Think of who you trust most in this world. That you trust anything, to tell them anything, you trust them with anything, everything, without fear, without doubt. It's those who you love and who love you the most. And therefore, it's prema bhakti. It's prema bhakti in the special mood of braja that allows one to get in. When our heart becomes so trustworthy because of the intense and thick sweetness of the loving service, to Radha and Krishna, then we're naturally there. It's natural, then we're there. One time in Vrindavan, I went to I had a relationship with one Goswami, a little distant relationship, and we were invited to some Leela drama. And the Leela drama was Radha and Krishna was sitting on a throne, and the gopis wanted to please them, so they performed the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And this was the drama. We were sitting there watching it, and someone was translating it. And then Radha and Krishna were so pleased that they said, "We'll give you anything we want." And the gopis said, "We want Shyam." And half the people in Vrindavan walk around saying, "Radhe, Radhe, Shyam Malade." This doesn't make one. It was wrong. It was wrong. Mahaprabhu taught something so wonderful and so intimate and so natural. Not Radhe, Radhe, Shyam Malade, but rather Gopi Bharta Parakamalayor Das Dasana Das. Such a trustworthy heart. Such trustworthy, loving consciousness. It doesn't want to grab Krishna from Srimati Radharani. Or the other way around. Very, 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 very deep. So when ignorance, and everything other than this is ignorance. And this is what Narada Muni is learning. That he was given some opulences only by Krishna. He was beautiful. He could play the musical instruments. His body was fragrant. And Krishna inspired the Prajapatis to take all that away because he misused it. He had to learn something. He had to learn who everything is meant to please. No percentages for me. No big percentages for me. No small percentages for me. Because that's not love. It still is business. And there is no business in Goloka Vrindavan. There is no business in Braja. There is only one thing in Braja. And that is love for Krishna. And Krishna becomes so conquered by that especially intimate mood that he can't leave Vrindavan. padam ekam na gacchati. He becomes completely captivated. He can't leave. He can't, his consciousness becomes so compressed that he can't even think of himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can only think of himself as Mother Yasoda's son, and therefore he becomes afraid. One of the acharyas, a great, great acharya, comments on Kunti Devi's prayers where she says, I'm so amazed to see this scene of you, of tears flowing from your eyes when Mother Yasoda is holding up a stick. I'm so amazed to see this scene. And one great acharya comments that she is so much in wonder and not being able to understand this because the Supreme Lord, with tears from his eyes, with the cudgel coming from his eyes, is imitating the ways of ordinary persons, ordinary children. And Srila Jiva Goswami comments, no. He very respectfully gives a more intimate meaning of her wonderment. He says that that's understandable, that he could be imitating the ways of an ordinary child, and that wouldn't fill Kunti Devi with amazement and wonderment because it's understandable. But what's really ununderstandable and filling her with wonder is that he's actually afraid of Mother Yasoda. And the tears are real tears. Real tears, either because he's so much afraid, or he's so much afraid that he's crying to stop her from punishing him further. This is the absolute truth who fear personified is afraid of, and how he's afraid of Mother Yasoda. Her love is so powerful that it has made him compressed. Mugdata. And this is what Vrindavan is. This is what Mankutir is. This is Vrindavan. This is the speciality of the love of the Brijbasis. It completely controls and conquers the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who can imbibe this concept? It is so unique, it is so wonderful, it is so intimate, it is so sweet, and it is not cheap. So Narada Muni's life will teach us something about what spiritual life actually is. It is the journey to the topmost platform of consciousness. So he realized that it was only my ignorance, and therefore it is the greatest adventure. Because, anyway, we'll speak more about that a little later. He realized that it was only, we're reading Prabhupada's purport. The gross body should be engaged in acts of rendering service to the Lord, as in bringing water, cleansing the temple, or making obeisances. The path of archana, or worshipping the Lord in the temple, involves engaging one's gross body in the service of the Lord. Similarly, the subtle mind should be engaged in hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, thinking about them, chanting his name. Listen to that. The subtle mind should be engaged in chanting his name, not just the tongue and the mouth. So that means hearing. All such activities are transcendental. This is Sarup Siddhi Bhakti. They have the potency of the Lord himself. None of the gross or subtle senses should otherwise be engaged. Now that is a high standard. And Prabhupada one of his greatest of expertises or greatest is that he set the standard so high because he knows what the standard is for being with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. And he's not going to tell us, yes, 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 all you have to do is serve with your gross body and pay me, keep contributing to the book fund or whatever, and therefore it's just, no, he's telling us the cost. None of the gross or subtle senses should otherwise be engaged. Such realization of transcendental activities is made possible by many, many years of apprenticeship of devotional service. But simply, and please listen to this, but simply attraction for love of the personality of Godhead as it was developed in Narada Muni is highly effective. This is Ragmarg. This is attraction. Spontaneously attracted, but yet one has to follow. But it's very effective if this becomes what we want instead of what we have to do. Next verse. Thus, during the two seasons, this is text 28, the rainy season and autumn, I had the opportunity to hear those great souls constantly chant the unadulterated glories of Lord Hari. He just heard and heard for these two seasons. There are six seasons, so each is 2 months. So for four seasons, the Chaturmasya, where they were staying in one place, and he was just a boy, but he served, he took the remnants, their nature became attractive to him, and he heard the nectar emanating from their mouths. And as the flow of my devotional service began, the coverings of the modes of passion and ignorance vanished. Itam sarat pravrisakav, thus in the autumn, and basically brishakal, the rainy season, ritu, these two seasons, Hari Vishrinvata, I continuously heard about Hari, May, myself, Anusavam, constantly, Yasha Amalam, the pure, not, there was no mal, there were no impurities in what I heard. Amalam, the unadulterated glories, Sankirtiya Manam, Muni B, chanted by these munis, he heard continuously from their purified hearts the glories of the Lord. Manatma B, from these great souls, Bhakti Pravrita, and my Bhakti Pravrita began to flow. Atma, Raja, Tama, Upaha, by this process of hearing, Srinvatam, Svakata Krishna, Punya Sravana Kirtan, Vidyantisto, Yabhadrani, Vidyanoti Saritsatam, by Krishna's grace, just by hearing, he did his part. He was so eager to hear. And Krishna removed all the Raja and Tama, all the Abhadrani. Upaha vanished. I'll read from Prabhupada's purport. Transcendental loving service for the Supreme Lord is the natural inclination of every living being. The instinct is dormant in everyone. But due to the association of material nature, the modes of passion and ignorance cover this from time immemorial. If by the grace of the Lord, and the great-souled devotees of the Lord, a living being becomes fortunate enough to associate with the unadulterated devotees of the Lord and gets a chance to hear the unadulterated glories of the Lord, certainly the flow of devotional service takes place like a flow, like the flow of a river. As the river flows on till she reaches the sea, similarly, pure devotional service flows by the association of pure devotees till it reaches the ultimate goal, namely transcendental love of God. Such a flow of devotional service cannot stop. On the contrary, it increases more and more without limitation. And the final verse we'll read right now. This is the symptoms of the of a determined devotee. So there's many lessons in this. One of the main ones is what is fortune is to hear about Krishna from devotees. This is what gives bhakti its force and moves us like the river flows to the ocean. And now, determination, the symptoms of a determined devotee of Krishna. Narada's, and this is the last verse we'll read, and we'll read Prabhupada's purport as well, short purport. I was very much attached to those sages. I was gentle in behavior, and all my sins were eradicated in their service. In my heart, I had strong faith in them. I had subjugated the senses, and I was strictly following them with body and mind. Everything was in harmony. His body, his mind, the sages and Krishna in harmony. No anxiety. Disharmony in us as, or imbalance in us as devotees comes when something is out of alignment. I've seen this with myself. And how can we be aligned without strong faith? How could we be aligned with Krishna, with Guru and Krishna, if we have senses that are out of control? And because that will pull the mind out of control. And if the mind is going one way and I'm supposed to be doing something completely different, there'll be such deep tension within the heart and consciousness. This is perfection. This is Narada's very, very perfect journey to the lotus feet of Krishna by the mercy of the Bhaktivedantas and due to his own extreme qualification. So again, our journey may not be so smooth because, as Prabhupada said in the purport, previous purport, that it takes perhaps years or lifetimes of apprenticeship to have such a smooth, immediate journey where he's practically a chief prema already. But yet we should know what the standards are, what the guidelines are, and this is what Shastra provides to us so clearly. The guidelines, the signposts, what to avoid, what to be careful of, how to see the events of our life, the perspective to see them in relationship to this great journey, the only journey of the soul going to Vrindavan. And the signposts are clearly given here by Sri Narada Muni, by his words. Strictly lined up, perfectly, in harmony. because that's what Goloka Vrindavan is. It's perfect harmony with Krishna's pleasure. Here's Prabhupada's purport. These are the necessary qualifications of a prospective candidate who can expect to be elevated to the position of a pure and unadulterated devotee. But it doesn't mean that one can say, yes, this is how a pure devotee acts, and therefore from now on I'm going to just do this by some mental adjustment, intellectual adjustment. We try our best, but it doesn't work like that. It takes purification, as Narada Muni was purified, and that's our process. The process of purification, so we can become like this, or if we're in a more purified stage, we're closer to becoming like this, and if we're already pure, we are like this. But it's a journey. It's a journey that may take some time. I want to emphasize this point because the journey begins by knowing the goal and seeing the signpost, but just by knowing it doesn't mean that we're there, and we shouldn't get discouraged ever because the goal seems further and further away. And when we read of the humility of the great acharyas, Krishnadas Kaviraj, Goswami Raj, saying that if you chant my name, you'll go to hell. I'm lower than... He's feeling like that. We read Narottama Das Thakur's words. So one naturally will be, rather than becoming discouraged, one becomes more conscious, painfully aware of one's lack, but becomes more hopeful because his dependence is no longer upon his abilities, but it becomes focused on the nature of the Lord to be causelessly merciful upon someone whose desire is very fixed and capacity feels unlimitedly small. The tension between these two. My desire is here and I have no capacity. Not my desire is here, and yes, I will march into the kingdom of God. I will march back home, back to Godhead like that. No, because the doorway is very, very, very small, and there's no room for a big false ego to fit through that doorway. Yes, I can do it. I'll go. The confidence of a pure devotee is in the mercy of the Vaishnavas, his guru, the Vaishnavas, and the merciful nature of Nityananda Prabhu, Mahaprabhu, and the holy Dham, and the Lord himself. Then he can be very confident and go in the world with full confidence, but it's never confidence in him. It's confidence in Krishna. So Prabhupada tells us what the qualifications are to be a candidate. These are the necessary qualifications of a prospective candidate who can expect to be elevated to the position of a pure, unadulterated devotee. Such a candidate must always seek the association of pure devotees. One should not be misled by a pseudo-devotee. He himself must be plain and gentle to receive the instructions of such a pure devotee. A pure devotee is a completely surrendered soul unto the personality of Godhead. He knows the personality of Godhead as the supreme proprietor of all and all others as his servitors. And by the association of pure devotees only, one can get rid of all sins accumulated by mundane association. One time in Melbourne in 1974, there was a program that the devotees had made at the town hall, and at the end of the program, one devotee asked Prabhupada the question, how do you become sincere? And Prabhupada replied very quickly by saying, how do you become a drunkard? If you want to become a drunkard, just associate with drunkards, because this is what association is. So therefore, a satsanga tyagi Vaishnavachar. Because in association, what's in hearts become transferred. And then Prabhupada, of course, wasn't indicating that the person desiring to become sincere go to the nearest pub or bar and associate with drunkards. And then he said something really, really heavy. He said, if you want to be sincere, associate with them. And he pointed to the devotees. That is heavy, isn't it? It does put a heavy weight on the devotees, doesn't it? To not be harboring material desires in their heart. And it puts such a weight, and it is probably that weight more than anything else that makes that sincerity of being willing to carry that weight that makes one, that purifies one, because then you realize that I have no ability to be on the position of associate with them, me. So then that causes one to become painfully conscious of one's inconsistencies, and because Prabhupada is saying here, these are the necessary qualifications of a prospective candidate. This is for to be a candidate. Subjugated the senses, strictly following with body and mind, not only body but mind. So taking up the service can make one humble. And then one has to depend and be very, very careful as well. One should be gentle. Not be led by pseudo devotees. He himself must be plain and gentle to receive the instructions of such a pure devotee. A pure devotee is a completely surrendered soul unto the personality of Godhead. He knows the personality of the Godhead as the supreme proprietor of all and all others as his servitors. Wasn't this Narada Muni's fault as Upabharana? He thought he was the proprietor of his opulences, his personal opulences. But Krishna is the proprietor, surrendered servant. And by the association of pure devotees only, one can get rid of all sins accumulated by mundane association. A neophyte devotee must faithfully serve the pure devotee. And he should be very much obedient and strictly follow the instructions. At this point, we will praise the incredible tolerance of Srila Prabhupada. These are the signs of a devotee who is determined to achieve success even in the existing duration of life. So we'll stop reading here. And I'll read this last sentence one more time, though. These are the signs of a devotee who is determined to achieve success even in the existing duration of life. Narada Muni was determined in that way, and he went like this. Very sincere and pure devotees, very intelligent devotees, will proceed as quickly as they can. Of course, it's according to the individual's capacity. So we see that my capacity may be not to take me like this, quickly like that, and maybe due to my particular nature and condition, I cannot go that straight, but I must go like this. But at least I should not go in the opposite way. Therefore, the goal, without ascribing the goal and letting that burn very brightly, making sure that the goal, what we're actually trying to do as devotees, where we're trying to go, without having that burn brightly in our heart, there's no question of a journey. We'll be just going left and right and left and right, and we'll be left, and it won't be right. But even though we may have to go like this according to our nature under guidance, because even an expert physician does not prescribe for himself. We have to go under guidance towards there, but we should remember something, and here is one of my little props. We should remember that time is running out. So on one hand, and I'll mention this again and again, I'll mention this because we go quickly, and some devotees will say, oh, I have to be very practical, and it's really legitimate to be practical. It's really legitimate to be practical, but it's not really legitimate to be only practical. We always have, that's why we're practical, but we always speak, what's the philosophy first? What's theoretically best? And then to be able to apply the philosophy to time and circumstances, that is what wisdom is. That is what vigyan is. But if we just be practical with no theoretical point to adjust from according to time, place, and circumstances, disaster. But yet, we should always remember that with every second that is passing, our time is running out. So therefore, we should move as quickly, I never say as quickly as possible, but as quickly as practical towards where we wish to be. And I'll tell you, it doesn't feel like time is moving either, but it is. Only until when you're 25, 20, 25, you really perceive that it's going to go on forever. And there's a part of you when you're 61 that also perceives that it's going together. But the mirror and the knee and the teeth and the eyes and the back and the shoulders. I'm going to start getting depressed. But I'm at least, I hope they're at least, you know, there are many doctors present, so I'll be okay. But these things are, these curses, the curses of the dwindling body, the dwindling mind, these are blessings to make us make sure we remember that what reality is, and that is that my time in this body is running out. And although I have to be practical, I shouldn't only be practical. I want to get to the goal. I want to get there. And that should be burning. And if that goal isn't burning in the heart, we will get distracted. Because the material world has two functions. To always be preaching to us. Always be preaching to us about the uselessness of material existence, and always being trying to attract us. So time is moving, and in fact, for this particular class, time has run out. Okay, thank you very much. There's no time for questions now or anything like that, or comments or anything like that, because now it's time for prasadam. And it's 8:30, and we shall meet again at 9:30. Can't trust these. So a half hour for breakfast, and we'll meet at 10 o'clock Bombay time, which means 11 o'clock. So that will give everyone time to settle. And also, please fill out, there's one sheet for that life balancing exercise. Please fill that out in your pad. And also, if you're able, please read that little pamphlet on prayerful reading, that hopefully it will, these both will come into play later on. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Narada Muni ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Radha Gopinath, Sri Gaunatai Bhaktivinoda ki jai. There are, the main reason is that, to tell you the very honest truth, is that I end up on the internet and everyone has heard it and I don't have enough time to make a new one. I don't know what to do with my life. That's a reason anyway, but an important one for me. This is the only one I do that on. And also because it's connected with activities and a particular mood of activities that I think it would be just, I don't want this to be another, it's really something for a retreat, this is my opinion, where we're trying to be very dependent on Krishna, not just for an interesting lecture. Those are the reasons. Thank you. Hare Krishna.